You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Our show today is brought to you by Biolumina Spirulina, one of the finest whole food products in the world. Hi, it's Carol again. I don't endorse many products, but Biolumina Spirulina is one product that I use and I highly endorse. Spirulina is called a superfood because of its high nutrient content. It has been proven that you could actually live on this product. Biolumina is the premium spirulina. It contains a high level of phycocyanidin and is a powerful antioxidant. There's also a lot of evidence that spirulina is a radiation protectant and cleanser. To find out more about Biolumina, go to www.newphoenixrising.com/beingwell or click on the link on the show page. I think you're really going to love this product. My guest today is Dr. Margaret Flowers. Dr. Flowers is a pediatrician who advocates for a single-payer national health insurance. Amongst other things, she is also the co-director of It'sOurEconomy.us. She's the editor of PopularResistance.org and co-host of ClearingTheFogRadio.org. She is also one of the organizers of the FlushTheTPP.org campaign. Today, we're going to be speaking with her about the TPP, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, what it all means, how we can pull back the veil of secrecy around this partnership that will not only affect our food rights, but many of our rights. And more importantly, what steps we can take to expose the TPP and what steps we can take to stop it. Dr. Flowers, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have you on our show today and find out a little bit more information about the TPP. But before we get started on that, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got involved with exposing the TPP?
Certainly. Thank you. So I'm a pediatrician, and I've been focusing over the last 10 years on advocating for a single-payer national health insurance, a universal health care plan. What I found through my work is that the same obstacles that we face in our work for single-payer health care are obstacles that others face when they're working for food justice, environmental justice, economic justice, you name it. It's this corporate power over our government that makes it dysfunctional. And so the way that we can get past that is if we work together strategically. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership is something that not only affects every issue that we care about, which we'll get into in this program, but it's also a struggle that we can win if we work together. And if we stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership from going through, it's a big loss for transnational corporate power, and it's something that our movement can build off of and hopefully keep pushing for the justice that we all seek.
Okay, great. So let's talk about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. What do we know so far? And I know that's a broad question, but let's just start at the beginning. I'd really like to educate our listeners as to what this agreement's all about.
Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement it's a free trade agreement and much more. Really, if you back up to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, in Seattle in the late 1990s, the WTO has not been able to move forward with their agenda of deregulation and freeing up trade since that battle for Seattle. So this is a new approach to that. These agreements, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and there's a sister agreement, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, which is being negotiated now as well. These two agreements will pretty much encircle the globe and allow the WTO to go forward on its agenda. So this is about trade, but it's about much more than trade. Of the 29 chapters they're negotiating, only 5 of them have to do with traditional trade, and the others have to do with things like patent protection, internet freedom, deregulating finances across borders, all this kind of deregulation that these corporations would like. What's unique about the TPP is, one, it's being done very secretly. In the past, when free trade agreements were negotiated, the text of those agreements was actually posted on the United States Trade Representative's website so that people could read it and know what was in it. But not only is this text being kept secret, it's classified information. So our members of Congress have very restricted access to it, and when they do read some of the text, they're not allowed to talk in public about what they read. But at the same time, there are over 600 corporate advisors who have real-time access to the text of the agreement as it's being negotiated so that they can comment and advise on it. So that's really a departure from where we've been before. And the other thing that is very significant and unique about this agreement is that other countries will be allowed to dock onto it, to join it, after it's been negotiated, but they have to agree to everything that's already been negotiated. So we're really kind of bullying some smaller countries to agree to provisions that they know will harm them so that we can make this formal agreement, and then other countries will then join it at that point.
Okay, and it's my understanding that there's 12 countries involved in this so far?
There are. It's the Pacific Rim countries right now, so New Zealand, Australia, Malaysia, Brunei, Singapore, Vietnam, Peru, and Chile, and then Canada, the United States, Japan just joined recently. So it's interesting because President Obama campaigned in 2008 on renegotiating NAFTA, and now that Mexico and Canada are part of this agreement, it's kind of like a renegotiation of NAFTA, but it's in the wrong direction. It's a NAFTA on steroids.
Right. I've heard that phrase many times about the TPP. And I've also heard that it is considered the largest corporate power grab and will just really undermine individual sovereignty.
That's another piece that's very concerning about it, is that this gives much greater legal power to transnational corporations to challenge laws that are made at every level, at the local, state, and federal level. And anything that's considered to be a barrier to trade or to hurt their expected profits, they can sue to get compensation for that. And the court is outside of our legal system. It's a trade tribunal, which is primarily staffed by corporate lawyers on leave from their corporate jobs to be the judges. So under NAFTA, we've already seen a taste of this with corporations suing countries when their laws interfere with money that they perhaps invested. Like in Canada right now, there's a case going forward of a company called Lone Pine Resources. That's a Canadian company which incorporated in Delaware in the United States so that it could sue its own country, Canada, because they banned fracking in the area around the St. Lawrence River. And this company wanted to frack there. They spent some money investigating that. And now they want $250 million in compensation because Canada banned fracking there. And this is just one example of many and a taste of what we'll see going forward.
Wow. And I know you mentioned that our elected representatives do not have access to the draft of this agreement. And it was my understanding that, or you said very limited, I didn't think they had any access to it. I heard Peter DeFazio talk about that, and he basically said, if this passes, we can kiss our economy goodbye if this secret trade agreement goes through.
Alan Grayson, who's a representative from Florida, did push for many months, I think it was like 8 or 10 months, to be able to see some of the text, and he was allowed to see some summaries of the text. He had to go into a room. He couldn't take any type of recording device or a pen or paper or a staffer with him to assist him. He had to do what was called read and retain only. And then he came out and made a statement saying that, one, from what he read, there was no reason for it to be secret. Two, it was a serious threat to our national sovereignty. Three, that was all he could tell us because it was classified. The only information that we have on what's in the Trans-Pacific Partnership comes from some of the chapters which have been leaked, and then information that has been able to be gleaned from speaking to some of the NGOs who have been in on some of the negotiations or some of the trade meetings where they've talked about what's going on in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But what we've seen so far is very worrisome.
Yeah, this is amazing to me because who is representing our interests if our representatives aren't allowed to have a say in this?
Right. And, you know, we know historically that when there's incredible secrecy, it means that this is not something that's good for us. Actually, the former U.S. Trade Representative, Ron Kirk, who was involved for the first several years of these negotiations, made a statement basically saying that the reason it was so secret is because if the American people knew what was in the agreement, they would never be able to get it signed. So that's concerning. The effect that this agreement could have on our laws, requiring that our laws come into conformity with this agreement, will really hurt every aspect of our lives. So this is something that not only unites us, but it's really imperative that we work to stop it, and we can.
Right, and we'll get into that toward the end of the show, because we always like to leave our listeners with ways that they can take action on something like this. So it's my understanding that President Obama is trying to fast-track this agreement.
That's correct. The Constitution gives the responsibility of overseeing trade and commerce to Congress. But President Obama has asked formally just recently for Congress to grant him fast-track, which is also called Trade Promotion Authority. The first time that we used fast track in this country was back in the 1970s. President Nixon asked for and got it, and it was renewed regularly after that. The reason that we got NAFTA and the WTO and a host of other bad policies was because of this fast track, and it basically takes that responsibility away from Congress, gives it to the White House so that the president can negotiate and then sign an agreement and then present it to Congress later for an up or down vote only. No hearings, no amendments, no testimony, nothing. They just vote yes or no. And, you know, if we look at what happened with the World Trade Organization treaty back in the mid-1990s, that was negotiated for 10 years. It was thousands and thousands of pages of text. It went to Congress for an up or down vote. Most members of Congress didn't read it, didn't really have any idea how far-reaching it would go and how much harm it would do.
Well, it's my understanding that a treaty requires two-thirds approval from Congress. But this is an agreement, right?
Right. I mean, it is, in effect, a treaty, but it's the Congress gives that power to the president. Then they're ceding their ability to, you know, have oversight over the treaty other than doing an up or down vote later on.
Okay. And this has been in the works since 2005?
Well, it actually started negotiations under President Bush, and he abandoned them. When President Obama first came into office, he said that he ran on, you know, renegotiating NAFTA so that it was better for workers. So he didn't go towards it right away. He initially was not going to pick it up, and then he turned around and did. So it's been negotiated for about the past 3 years in earnest. They've, you know, regular meetings.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit. I'd like to talk about some of the issues in this agreement that are pretty scary. Let's start with the internet. What does this mean for the internet and IP enforcement?
So what we know is that, you know, the SOPA that they tried to put through Congress and was so widely protested and was stopped, but those types of provisions would go through, are included in the Trans-Pacific Partnership text. And so things like there could be much stricter enforcement of you know, things that we post that you know, if you take any piece of something from someone else, that could be seen as like a copyright violation, or could be restricted. It would just be much tighter rules on what we could share through the internet.
So in essence, the internet service providers can act as copyright cops policing the info you share.
Right, right. And then reporting you if they see anything that you've shared that they consider to be an infringement.
You could actually be locked out of the internet for violating these rules.
Right, or fined, or, you know, who knows.
Okay. I think the whole NSA and spying issue is a concern for people right now, and this kind of, it just adds one more thing to our freedom to use the internet.
Yeah, it's really concerning because the internet is a place where people are able to share information all around the world, and that's a really good thing because we can learn from each other. But you know, the corporations would like to use the internet as a way to profit and hold on to information as proprietary, and really, you know, create barriers for people to get information. So this is a huge struggle to maintain that internet freedom.
And I think one of the other values to having the internet is, you know, we can all become journalists and report things as we see it, you know, as opposed to just relying on mainstream media, which, as we know, is owned by a few corporations.
Right, and that's incredibly important as well, because that was all part of kind of a plan that was initiated back in the 1970s to kind of protect the free market, was to gain control of the media so that those corporations, you know, six corporations control all of the major media in this country, to control information that people have. And the growing citizens' media has just been a tremendous move forward for people to be able to get real information about what's going on.
I agree. So let's move on and talk about food, which is what we're all about here at Food Integrity Now, and preserving our food integrity, which is going downhill pretty rapidly. How will this affect our food rights?
Well, there's a few things. I mean, one that's really concerning is this getting rid of kind of Buy America provisions. So right now, if a public entity is negotiating for food contracts, say it's a school system or a hospital system, what the TPP would mean is that all food corporations that apply for those contracts would have to be given equal footing. So if a foreign food provider wanted to compete for a contract, that school system or hospital system can't give preference to their local, American food system. So it really hurts kind of our local food sovereignty in that way. So if you think of all the schools that are starting to do farm-to-table type of programs, it would really make those more difficult to move forward, because there would have to be this kind of level playing field where the private corporations would have to get the same treatment as the local ones. Another one is that through this trade tribunal, foreign corporations can sue the United States if any of our laws interfere with their expected profits. So some of our food safety laws, basically, that say, you know, that we need to have labeling so we know what's in our food, or that certain things can't be added to the food, or certain kind of safety standards of the treatment of food as it's being prepared, those could be seen, if they aren't equal to kind of these weak international standards, those could be seen as trade barriers, and we could be sued and forced to change them.
It makes me wonder what would happen with the GMO food labeling.
Right. Well, I think that GMO food labeling could definitely be seen as a barrier, because if people know that GMOs are in their food, they're not going to buy the food, right?
Hopefully that's the plan.
Or fewer people than would buy them, and so that would be seen as something that hurts the corporation's profits.
Hmm. And what about our farmers? I read something about how this would affect farmers not producing commodities for industrial food feed and agri-fuel complex, that they would, well, I know they're excluded from the TPP negotiation, but I think a central goal of the TPP is to circumvent the WTO deadlock and take agricultural liberalization. In essence, the TPP, if implemented, would expand protection for investors over consumers and farmers and restrict our government's ability to use public policy to reshape our food system.
I mean, you just have to look at who it is that's actually negotiating this agreement, and you know, it's corporations like Cargill and a number of the other big ag, DuPont and others that are negotiating this. And what they're kind of the basic ideology of the Trans-Pacific Partnership is that everything should be on the market, and no entities should have special advantages. So we couldn't, if we wanted to really encourage small farming and local food production, mm-hmm. that would be seen as unfair treatment to these other corporations, these big ag corporations that want to get into those markets. And it means that everybody's got to function at the same level, which is really hard for small farms to be able to have the same kind of structure in place as these big ag farms have.
So it would basically kind of be like a one size fits all.
Right, and it would make it hard for those small farmers to be able to fit that big size.
Right, and it's bad enough that the big ag corporations are squeezing out the farmers in the United States, but to have this happen on a broader level it's very sad to me.
I mean, already we've seen that our small farms are really being hurt by a lot of these kinds of requirements that they have to meet that are hard for small farmers to meet. And then these requirements are just put in place to make it difficult for them to survive.
So anything else around food that you want to share with us in the TPP?
Well, I think there's also a concern that we wouldn't be able to do things like banning the import of foods like meat that don't meet our safety laws. There was a case that the U.S. had against a Canadian beef company when there was some mad cow disease that was discovered, and we wanted to stop the importation of meat from that area, and we were sued, and it took many millions of dollars and a long time to actually win that case to stop those imports. So you know, this is the kind of thing that we would be experiencing again.
Okay, and then what about the pharmaceutical agreements in this TPP? Yes. I'm concerned about that. Can you explain that?
Yes, that's actually one of the areas where we do know a little bit more because one of the chapters was leaked back in June of 2011. And what it said was that pharmaceutical and medical device corporations could be given patents for 20 years. This is really unheard of. You know, the reason that they patent these entities is that they're able then to charge very high prices for them and prevent generics from being made. That would be much less expensive. So, number one, they would get a 20-year patent. But secondly, if the medication or the device is found to have another use that they didn't specify the first time around, or if they change something about how it's made or how it's delivered, they can renew that patent for another 20 years. So this is something that's called an evergreen patent process because they can just keep that patent green, keep renewing it. And this is something that, well, in particular, it's going to hurt the countries that are poorer countries than the United States because it prevents generics. It keeps the prices of medications very high. It keeps life-saving medications out of the hands of the people that really need them. But that does, as you know, if epidemics are to occur because people can't get access to the medicines they need, that really hurts the whole globe. But in addition to that, the Trans-Pacific Partnership gives greater legal rights to pharmaceutical companies to fight any, you know, if there's a price that's set, if a public system like our Medicare or Medicaid or VA sets a price that they're willing to pay for a medication. Now, this is a new thing that these corporations can sue and fight whether they think that's a fair price or not. And the way that they set a fair price is much higher than the bar right now because it includes their marketing as well as their research and production. And marketing is what they spend a much greater percent of their money on. And so that would have to be included in the price that we would pay, raise the cost of medications, and hurt what our public health system would be able to provide.
And I think I read somewhere about it would really affect Canada because they have drugs are much cheaper in Canada, and it could force Canada just to raise these prices on their drugs.
Right. Again, there's a whole language in there about what's called state-owned enterprises. So these are enterprises that have any kind of benefits or advantages from the government. So the public health systems, like our public health systems that I mentioned, the Medicare, Medicaid, and the VA, Canada has, their whole health system is a public health system. Likewise, Japan and Australia, which have two of the top health systems in the world, they have a huge advantage because they can negotiate for a fair price that they pay for medications, and that way they can provide much more for the money that they spend to their population under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Those negotiations would be challenged. Would be seen as unfair advantages. They could, you know, fight for higher prices, and that's going to really undermine those public health systems.
Well,
it's kind of like we're exporting our failed health model around the world.
Right, and it doesn't make any sense to me because why would these countries even want to do this? Or is it so secret in the other countries too?
Why would the other countries want to participate? You know, there's a huge pushback in New Zealand and Australia and Japan. A lot of the health professionals and the public are really pushing back against this, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because they do see it undermining their health systems.
Okay. But I guess that begs the question, then who's pushing it in these other countries? The corporations, right?
Absolutely, right. It's the corporations that are negotiating, putting pressure. And it's kind of the typical story that we see, that, you know, the United States can be a huge bully on the global market, bullying other countries into acquiescing to what the United States wants for our corporations, our large corporations.
Well, and what else? What other areas of our lives could be affected by this?
Another area that we've experienced so well with NAFTA is the loss of jobs and the decline in wages. We've seen, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs that left the United States under NAFTA, and we'll see the same kind of thing with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Walmart is a very big player in the TPP, because they think that the wages in China are too high, and they want to get into the markets in Vietnam and Malaysia more than they are now. And with this kind of greater legal strength that they have, they would challenge any kind of labor protection laws or wage laws, and so it would really start to drive down, you know, global wages, and that has an effect on the United States as well, because we can't compete, you know, with the wages that people can accept that are still poverty wages, but at least, you know, their cost of living is lower than these other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So it will cause us to lose jobs and really drive down wages, because these corporations can say, well, you know, I can't pay what you want here in the United States. We're just going to move our factory elsewhere, which is, you know, we've already seen. So that's a concern, and just a concern is the, we remember what happened in April in Bangladesh with the factory, the building that collapsed, and so many that were killed. You know,
right.
That's the kind of thing that we may see more of, as these corporations say that worker safety laws hurt them. Another area that's very concerning, I think, to everyone is the environmental piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, environmental protection laws could be seen as barriers to expected profit. And so if we look at what's happening right now with this really extreme energy extraction through fracking, through deep water drilling, mountaintop removal, now even with uranium mining, they're starting to use this process that's similar to fracking of injecting fluids underneath the ground. These types of energy extraction have really serious consequences to our water, to our food, to our environment, and so they'll have, these corporations that do this will have, again, greater legal standing to prevent laws that would require them to be responsible for what they're doing, you know, to clean up any kinds of disasters that they create or compensate for health effects that they cause. I mean, we're seeing this already to some extent in the United States with, you know, fracking, and close to me in Pennsylvania, there are serious health effects that people in the community are experiencing. The physicians are not allowed, if they do find out what chemicals are in the fracking fluid, they're not allowed to talk about it and share it. So, you know, they can't even really get advice or talk openly about what chemicals their patients are being exposed to. And so, you know, this is just going to strengthen that power of the corporation even more.
It really is about greed and profit over people, isn't it?
That's what it boils down to. It really is. We call it a global corporate coup. It's giving the corporation
right.
more power in sovereign nations, and their only concern is how can they loot and profit off of people and the planet.
Right. I was watching a video of Lori Wallach, who is the director of the Public Citizens Global and Trade Watch, and
yes.
she actually called it a quiet coup d'etat. And I thought, you know, that was very well put. And I'm so surprised, Margaret, at the number of people who don't even know what TPP is.
Yeah, it's been amazing because the media blackout on this has been tremendous. You know, we did actions a year ago when they held a secret round of negotiations at a remote resort in Leesburg, Virginia. We did as much as we could to expose it with kind of spectacle actions. We put out press releases. We tried to get the press there. They just wouldn't cover it. It's pretty amazing how they've been clamped down upon.
Well, I guess that just shows the importance of using the internet to spread the information like you do and like we do at Food Integrity Now. And for our listeners, what is your website?
So the website is flushthetpp.org. If you think of TPP as toilet paper plush, we want to flush it down, so it's flushthetpp.org. And, you know, that is the importance of independent and citizen media, because the more that we write about it and we blog and, you know, do video and radio and all of that, the less the corporate media can stay away from it, because they start to look bad. You know, suddenly everybody's learning about this huge corporate trade agreement that's being negotiated in secret, and the media is not covering it. That makes them look, you know, pretty shameful.
Right. And besides spreading the word about TPP, what action can you suggest that people can actually take to help stop this secret trade agreement?
Well, this is what is really great about this opportunity, is that there have been about a dozen free trade agreements stopped over the last decade or so, and that was done through public pressure. So what we're focused on right now is stopping Congress from voting for fast track. We don't want Congress to give authorization to the president to sign this agreement quietly and secretly in the night. And so we're asking members of Congress to promise to vote no on fast track. Right now the members are in their home districts. They'll be there until about September 8th. So you can contact their office, schedule a visit, or you can download a letter that we have under our tools section on flushthetpp.org, and take that letter to your member of Congress, ask them to promise to vote no. And then on September 17th, which happens to be Constitution Day, we're going to be looking at our members of Congress to find out whether they're going to uphold their constitutional responsibility to oversee trade. So people are organizing actions at their district congressional offices to either thank their member of Congress if that member promises to vote no, or spank them, quote unquote, if they don't promise, if they don't promise that they'll vote no, if they either waffle or say that they're going to support it. And what we mean by spanking is really calling out their corporate funders and exposing who it is that they're serving and protecting, not the people, but what industries are they getting paid off, you know, by to represent. And then we're going to be moving into focusing on Washington, D.C. for those who can make it there with actions in Washington, D.C., with actions in Congress, to put a real spotlight on the members, let them know that we're there watching what they're going to be doing around Fast Track. And we'll be asking for those who can't make it to keep up the pressure locally in solidarity at their members' district offices to keep reminding them that we're watching up until that vote comes, which way they're going to go. So that's outlined on the flushthetpp.org website. People can sign up also for our regular email blast. But there's kind of two major pieces here. One is education. We've got to let more people know about it. And the other is letting members of Congress know that this is not a politically favorable thing for them to do if they vote for Fast Track.
Great. And all of that information that you were just speaking about is on your website, correct?
That's all on Flush the TPP. We also have links to other websites like the Global Trade Watch through Public Citizen. Another very good one is Citizens Trade Campaign. And those websites are really packed with information about, you know, more of the specifics of what we know or think is in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We have some of that information on Flush the TPP. We do have some nice kind of photos with information on those that people can copy and share widely, but also Public Citizen has another website, Expose the TPP, which has PowerPoint presentations and other kind of memes, photographic memes that people can borrow and spread around through social media.
Wonderful. And I think this is an opportunity for everyone, especially if you feel like you don't have any personal power, to actually, you know, do something that could really make a difference, and because it affects the quality of all of our lives. It affects everyone.
It affects our future, really. You know, it affects the future health of our planet and the health of our people, the food that we eat, the water that we drink, the air that we're going to breathe. And you'd be amazed at how powerful people actually are. I think we don't really appreciate that. And, you know, we had done a lot of actions back when the Super Committee was meeting in Washington in the fall of 2011. They were trying to cut Medicare and Social Security at that point. And we put a lot of pressure on them. And it was maybe just a few hundred people in all that were involved of going to their committees, protesting there, marching through the streets, doing our own kind of Super Committee hearings to talk about what kind of you know, budget we would really like one for the people and the planet. And just that, and just knowing that there was people were very aware and were watching, caused them to back down and not make any recommendations at that point. So we can stop this if we make ourselves aware of what's going on and let the members of Congress know that we're watching them.
Right. Well, the two pieces are education, then action. Well, thank you, Margaret, for being a guest on Food Integrity Now, and we really appreciate you sharing this information with us, and we'll do our best to spread the word and to help inform the public. And from there, we feel it's our individual responsibility to share this information and to take steps to help stop this agreement from passing.
Yes, it really is, and it's something that we can do, and it will move us towards a better future if we do that.
Okay, and once again, the website is flushthetpp.org. Check it out, get involved, share the information, write your congressperson, and we can get this done if we get enough people involved. Thank you again, and thanks to our listeners for joining in, and we will be back next week with another great show. You can find us on Facebook at Food Integrity Now. Our website is foodintegritynow.org, and we appreciate you listening. Have a great day.